In the Moment is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 26th to 28th in Spearfish.
The music of summer in South Dakota. From SDPB, today is Friday, August 1st. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we welcome George Ensley and Charlie Roth. They bring us news from the road to Montrose, and they'll play a few songs for us as well. Libby Kirkpatrick shares a song so fresh it just got off the plane. The Harris Family Band has a tribute to a metal legend. That's coming a bit later in the hour. And we will preview the Sioux River Folk Festival at Newton Hills State Park. Join us this hour for music, musings, and community right here on South Dakota Public Radio. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're In the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Last weekend, the Montrose Music Festival brought traveling musicians to a campground in small town South Dakota. Well, the road to Montrose connects festivals from Jackson, Minnesota to Montrose to Newton Hills, and often artists make a stop here at SDPB Studios. George Ensley is a product of the 1960s Houston folk music scene. He has shared the stage with artists like Townes Van Zandt, Guy Clark, and Billy Joe Shaver. He has released more than 15 albums and is a member of the Texas Arts Commission's touring roster. Charlie Roth is known as the Bard of St. Cloud and a man of 1,000 songs. His fifth album rose to number 6 on the Europe Americana charts. And the two artists join me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls.
So, George, how long have you been playing and traveling and making music?
Well, I started in 67 playing out public, so.
In Texas?
In Texas, in Houston. I was introduced to Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark at a club called the Sand Mountain Coffee House, which was just that. It was a coffee house back then in the 60s. It just served coffee and tea and had the fishnet candles on the table, you know, and folks listened, and I had some guitar training with classical music, and my teacher, my mentor, introduced me to those guys in the folk scene, Daryl Harris, his name, and then I moved to Austin. About that time, so I was back and forth playing those venues, and then I got into the college coffee house circuit when they had college coffee houses back then.
Yeah. What was happening in the scene then with folk music that drew you? Was it the music? Was it the culture? What was important to you about it then to make the move from maybe a classical path?
Well, yeah, it was the story. Really, that intrigued me mostly, the storytelling, and which I really appreciated with folk music, and so I just took the classical style that I'd learned on my right hand and developed it pretty easily into a folk style of picking. And
so you're hearing who for the first time? You're hearing Joni Mitchell and Joan Baez and Bob Dylan for the first time. Like, you're hearing people in person, or you're hearing them on the radio, trying to put in contact. Now we could just open up, you know, I want to research you before you come in. I just open up my phone and I type your name in. It's very easy for me to say, oh, George Ensley's coming. Back then it was harder to
yeah.
Or maybe not. That's my question.
When I was first learning, it was there was Donovan, there was Peter, Paul, and Mary, of course. There was the Kingston Trio initially. Paul Simon was the one that I gravitated toward more than any of them because of the depth of his work. And not only his guitar playing sophistication, but his lyrics, you know. And so he was a big influence on me, and then mostly I was, you know, writing my own stuff. So as far as who I was listening to,
when you started writing your own stuff, what were some of the first themes that you picked up on? Like, you had, at some point, you knew you had something to say.
Well, of course, you know, in your 20s, you're doing everything for the first time. So
yeah.
It's pretty exciting, you know, traveling. And I went up to New York and went up. And I happened to be up there in 69, the summer of 69, went to the Newport Folk Festival and saw Joni Mitchell, who was one of my heroes, and mm-hmm. Then came home and watched Armstrong walk on the moon. Then I went to Woodstock. So that was a pretty explosive summer that I can still mm-hmm. remember. The college circuit was really lucrative at that point. It was really gratifying because they had all the coffee houses.
Yeah.
And so just that whole gestalt, you know, that ambience of a listening audience. You could tell your stories and yeah. people could hear the lyrics. And people were there to get deeper into yeah. The listening mode than you know, all the rock stuff that was going on at the time. So,
yeah. Charlie, tell me a little bit about your start and some of your travels early on and this idea of listening. It's big for Matt Faulkner to talk to, you know, like, we're going to listen, which can be a shift in mindset today in the modern era, I think.
I was in a dance band, and I always made people dance, and that was, I was good at it. I had a lot of fun. I quit my day job, and I started doing that, and then I got a job. Greg Brown was playing a sold-out show, and it was 1982, and I wanted to go, and I asked the guy, I said, well, who does your sound system? And he says, well, I have to rent it from the music store. So I went, and I said, well, I got a sound system. And he hired me, gave me $25 a sandwich and all the beer I could drink, and I started to go to folk singer school. So I opened up for Bill Staines, Greg Brown, these people, I see them coming through every year. Kate Wolf, okay. I saw all the people that were on the only venue that would hire these people, and I started to want to do that, you know. But and then, like, Dave Moore's going to be at our festival, and he came through. Dave Moore blew my mind, and he was in that camp. You know, Greg Brown was huge mm-hmm. because of Garrison Keillor in Minnesota. So yeah. he outgrew our venue. But these people that are troubadours, Greg Klima, who's going to be at the festival, slept on my couch many times. Jonathan Bird slept on my couch. And, I mean, we had a guest room, but I'm going to say this couch surfing thing. Mm-hmm. With what people do in this kind of music is support, like the Fransons. You know, their house was full and they have a Airbnb, which was where I stayed. And it's they'll do anything for a troubadour like George.
What's special about the Montrose Music Festival?
Well, Charlie first introduced me to the concept of coming this far, you know, for that experience, and I trust Charlie, and I always have, and you know, and then the road to Montrose, we just came along with it. So in terms of the budget to make the trip and make it happen, I mean, that was real helpful. And in this case, he's trying apparently to replicate the campfire type of ambiance, you know, which is that's got a certain magic to it, you know, the playing outside in front of a fire. There's just something about, you know, acoustic guitars and stars.
What would you like to play for us today?
I asked for strength and I got troubles to get me straight and strong. I asked for wisdom and I got problems. Taught me right from wrong. I asked for courage and I got dangers to get me through my fears. I asked for answers and I got silence. Taught me how to hear. I asked for love and I got strangers who needed a helping hand. I asked for mercy and I got an old friend who needed another chance. I asked for beauty and I got to see the world through the eyes of a child. I asked for understanding and got to see an old one smile. Got the world in a raindrop and the promise in a sea. I got all I wanted when I got all I. When I ask for years, I got moments instead. And when I ask for a feast, I got my daily bread. I ask for wealth, and I got work. Hands to make my pay. I asked for truth, and I got a lady stands beside me all the way. And I got the world in a raindrop and the promise in a sea. I think Charlie ought to play one.
I'd like that.
I got a new album coming out. I got several that I could play, but when I think this one is, it speaks to that barroom singer that wants to and this is called Julie the Waitress.
Yes.
And so Julie, I was working in a sports bar in February and it was pretty bleak. So this is the story of not so much me, but Julie and her struggles. Well, Julie, the waitress, she's on until close. It's a slow night at the bar. There's some old guy singing his old country songs on the corner stage with his old guitar.
And Juanita, she dances with herself again as the last table heads for the door. And a football game is on. Sound is turned down. Ross, the bartender, watches the score. Nothing out here is gilded in gold. Nothing is coated in chrome. Everyone here is just trying to get by. If you ain't getting by, then you're gone. Now Julie, the waitress, she's lost in her phone, sipping coffee there at the bar stool. She has to be up by 6 a.m. to get her kids off to school. And then she heads to her other job, stacking shelves at Ron's grocery store. Or what with just tips and minimum wage. Far anymore. Nothing out here is gilded in gold. Nothing is coated in chrome. Everyone here is trying to get by. If you ain't getting by, then you're gone. Now the one-man band, he's packed up his van. Ross, the bartender, closes the till. She stacked the chairs, swept the floor and the stairs. Looks like Juanita's gotten her fill. I'll sleep there in the booth, Julie says. Come on, Juanita. I'll give you a ride home again. You can come get your car tomorrow. 'Cause tonight you could sure use a friend. Nothing out here is gilded in gold. Nothing is coated in chrome. Everyone here is trying to get by. If you ain't getting by, then you're gone.
That's Charlie Roth and George Ensley. Learn more about their music online. That's Charlie Roth, R-O-T-H, and George Ensley, E-N-S-L-E. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Libby Kirkpatrick played the Montrose Music Festival this year, and before she headed to Montrose, she stepped off a plane in Sioux Falls and stopped by SDPB's Kirby Family Studio with her guitar. She also held in her hand a white piece of paper where she had scribbled a brand new song on the airplane. Here's our conversation. Welcome to the studio, Libby.
Thank you so much for having me, Lori.
You just got into town. Where are you coming in from?
Where was I? In a box canyon called Jackson Hole, visiting family.
And then you bring your guitar on the plane with you?
I did.
Do you have to buy a seat for it?
I didn't. No, yeah. I slummed it, and I made eye contact with the people that carry the guitar away as you worry.
Oh.
And they were so kind. They got the vibe. They were like, we'll take care of your baby.
Nice. Nice. How much time do you spend traveling then for music throughout your life? It's just a total nomadic lifestyle from the beginning? Tell me a story.
How much time, you ask? I think there's a part of me that never stopped. You know, I just kept on going right like a shot through the, like some sort of eternity, like borrows my body, and I'm always traveling, even in stillness, I'm thinking, or out there in the ethers, in the clouds. But in terms of, you know, time in cars, planes, trains, automobiles, maybe half my life I've been traveling, but I was just a parent though. So
how do you get used to where you're at? Does it matter? Is it all the same? Is it all a new adventure? I'm wondering what that experience of travel is like for you, of wandering.
Oh, that's such a nice question. I check in using proprioception. So that is one important concept. It's the job of your muscles and other ingredients of the body to sense where I am and where you are and where I am, where we are in space. So when I am checked in using the sense of proprioception,
okay,
I can find my tail, I can find my feet, I can find east, west, north, south, above, below, and in the center. And that's that kind of brings me back into space-time that I recognize if I'm too far out there in thoughts or in dreamland.
Okay. Was there a time when that clicked for you as an embodied feeling versus an academic or conceptual thing where you're like, oh, yeah, that's what they meant?
Yes, there was a time when I got it. And that came, thank you for these questions because they just bring me, talking about proprioception, it's like, oh, I just got off a plane. Where am I? Mm-hmm. Here's my little compass. Yeah, it was actually when I met a kind of Jedi couple. They were called the Chitties. And they taught me the feeling, the sensate feeling of checking into time-space in a body.
Yeah.
They were practitioners, healing practitioners, and the modality that they taught, and we're still learning, is craniosacral therapy.
Okay.
So that's like, you know, there's your top, the cranium, and then the sacrum, the bottom, sacrum, the bottom. And if you can kind of get a sensory experience between those two, it's just like tuning a guitar. You know, there's a moment there where your harmonics might be cacophonic, really wide, you know, not making much sense, too much caffeine. You know, sounding like a broken typewriter. And then there's some quiet and a dropping in, and there's this natural rhythm that comes back that always helps me. It takes a while to find it, and just a question of listening, I think.
Taking a break for a while. What happened?
Oh, I had a baby of my own.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grown up now or still growing?
He's 18.
Yeah, he's 18.
He's on the wild right now.
And so that kept you in one place for longer than you were used to. What was that like for you?
It was a good workout for the nervous system to sit down again. And first it started with nursing, like get back in the nursing chair. Sit down again. Sit down. You think you know where you're going? Sit down. Sit down. And the one that wanted to run out and fix it or rescue or, you know, song and dance it or whatever, just had to keep sitting down.
Yeah.
So maybe it myelinated the nerves enough, you know, to get me back into a restorative state. But the trick is to stay a little a little agitated, like can't just sit there and be forever. You got to do, like, you know, Frank Sinatra said, got to doobie doo. He was the doobie doobie guy. Oh, not the Doobie Brothers. That's a different kind of doobie. Anyway, there's a little too much. I could take a run-on sentence and go with it. But this practice of getting up and getting off the couch, it's a blessing. It's a grace. And Matt Faulkner and this festival is, I don't know what I'll find, but I kind of think I know. And he just kept sparking the invitations. It was like an ignition.
I'm reading a book now called The Baby on the Fire Escape, and it's about female artists and motherhood. I find it fascinating as people consider what it means for different mothers throughout time to make art and mother, sometimes at the same time, sometimes with breaks, and then their children looking at them as artists too.
Yeah, I have some friends that didn't take a backseat. They didn't stop. That's what I mean to say.
Yeah.
And I marvel at their ability to continue to create. And their children are amazing. Most of them, their children are amazing musicians.
Yeah. You played music for your son, though?
I did. Anything I did, usually he came over and was like, hey, don't get attention because you need to take care of me now. you need to put the, get the guitar out and he'd come over.
He liked the spotlight. Does he still like the spotlight?
In a way. He's very covert. He's got stellium and Scorpio. So.
Okay. Tell me about writing songs. What's that like for you? What's the process of writing?
Wow, Lori, thank you for all these questions. Well, sometimes it's just a question of too much caffeine.
And, it's got to go somewhere?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the one that I just wrote in the plane, I think it has something to do with physics. If you can get out of your shell enough, get kind of high enough, if you will, there's stuff out there in the astral plane that's just looking for an antenna.
So you just wrote this on a... What is this piece of paper right in front of me?
It's a scrap of Scott paper towel cover.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And like a pen. She gave me it. I was like, yeah, a napkin, a pen. She was like, how about this? My brother's name's Scott. I just came from seeing him. My dad used to work for Scott Paper. And the song is called I Met the Sun. And I just scribbled out. I made a triptych, figured, you have less than an hour from Jackson Hole, Wyoming to Sioux Falls. I made three little verses, and I don't know what good they are, but I have no idea.
So no one's heard this other than you in your head.
I haven't even played it.
We don't even know if we're going to air it.
Perfect.
But we're going to just hang out and hear it.
Okay. All right, let's see what happens. Will it stand up on its own? Can I read it? I have no idea. It goes, I'm at the son of a president bygone of Lebanon. He was a steward of the United flight I happened to be on. And somehow in the safety speech, he stealthily added on that time is irrelevant, ambivalent. Which one? The closer to the sun. I'm at the sun. And as he blurred on past me, all the words became as one. I figured right away he was a Gemini. It takes one to know one. The back of the carrier was empty, and in the pink light sun, shadow slid. We flipped our lids, laughing at the word puns, and we met the sun. We met the sun. Ooh. Later, inside the box canyon, in a seed from the family tree, I blended timelines again and had a farmer's market spree. At the booth, I saw a telescope, and the guy with gold teeth introduced me to my dad's Corona Jamboree. I'm at the sun. I can't remember when I last met the sun. Sidewalk
in the opposite way. I might not recognize you with all that hair facial. I'll ask you where you've been, where you're going, and can I walk your way? I'd surely like to see you then. Will we be together as friends? Will we say?
Can I write in my journal? Thanks.
What did it feel like to hear it for the first time?
Oh, my critic is a pain. Critic's like, but you didn't weave together the 47 concepts that fit onto 3 pages.
Will you weave them together later? How will that song change and grow as you play it?
It shall take some discipline that I have not had lately. I used to write and then take seriously responsibility to the baby, the little baby's water light. And then COVID happened, and we wrote a song a week for like weeks and weeks and then years. And I just became flooded, and I got out of the habit of taking them all in. And okay. Still in recovery.
From which part?
From overwhelm of so many songs, from the freeze that the lockdown produced in my nervous system, from, you know, whoever I am after separation, and whoever we are after, you know, the corona, I have no idea what that meant, the corona jamboree.
Yeah.
I don't know. The coronal jamboree. Anyway, I want to figure it out too. Like, what is that song about? And is it a key to the next thing? And the only way I'll know is if I go back to it and tend it.
So what does that mean happens next?
Oh, hold on, let me hike my antenna higher. I'll see if I can feel in the wind. I think it's up to us to determine whether we'll create or whether we will just weather what is being created.
You have this festival, and people are going to sit in a song circle around you, and you're going to hear people who are brand new and have just written a song and have it on a scrap of notebook or a fragment in their head, and then other people who are national touring acts are going to come and just polish, play something that just feels like it's all shiny and it's been in a rock tumbler. What's that experience like for people who are in that circle, accepting just the huge variety of creative output from musicians in a circle?
Oh, wow. Such an insightful question. Well, I guess I don't know. It depends on how cleaned up my lens is. You know, if I'm disorganized, it all might go by in a blur. But if I can attune to everything and stay inside my center, it'll probably just be magic upon magic upon magic. Yeah. I have to note the sound of, you know, not cacophonous, but the sound of voices, you know, everywhere around us. I remember how boring it was to feel polished. And I was like, ah, this has got to stop.
Yeah.
I got to create a different thing.
Yeah.
And not that I was ever polished, because I've always been slightly hair, you know, whatever you think I sound like. Yeah, coming in raw too. I don't know. I'm mm-hmm. really looking forward to this melting process of, you know, being with raw ears and with polished ears, probably two different sides of the brain.
Yeah.
Not to be binary or anything, but I look forward to it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
going to enrich the heck out of me. And I tend to speak too long about my dreams, but the one I had before I got here was so cool. It was me helping people like park and make cornbread, and I told them where to go get the ingredients for or where to park their car, and they didn't get it. So I went outside and I helped them. And I realized as I walked away from the area that I was delegating these or talking to these people, it was my home from my childhood that I didn't recognize in the dream until I walked away. And then my old neighbors were right there, like cross-dressed or Halloween dressed or something. Everybody was wearing different outfits. And I looked back and I was like, wow, I'm still home. I'm still home. Refining as best I can with this old instrument, the incoming, data sounds too technical, the incoming weather patterns.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. It's the 45th anniversary of the Sioux River Folk Festival. Music lovers can hear performances from August 1st to the 3rd at Newton Hills State Park in southeast South Dakota. Carol Southwinter and Janet Schmitz of the Friends of Traditional Music Board joined me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls to preview the upcoming festival. How long have you been involved with it, Janet?
I've been on the board for, I think, about 15 years.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I consider myself kind of a latecomer to this event. My older brother, Greg, has been on the board for, 30-plus years, I think. And he tried for years and years to get me to come to this festival, and I always had an excuse. And, you know, what it boiled down to is I just didn't think it was my kind of a thing. And I finally gave in one year, and I went down there for the festival, and I was like, oh, my God, is this what I've been missing all these years?
Yeah. Is this
real? I just
real?
Couldn't believe how incredible it was. And so I just jumped in. I saw how much work went into it. I jumped in and started helping and volunteering, and a couple of the other board members said, why don't you just join the board? And so here I am.
Carol, how long have you been involved with the festival?
Well, technically, I've been involved with the board for, I think I'm at 13 years, 13 or 14.
Yeah.
But actually, it was my first date with my husband. And we have been married 40 years. We celebrated 40 years in June. We met, I think, 42 years then. And we went to Sunday on the Grass in Sioux Falls. And then we went down to Newton Hills. And it was the first year it was moved to Newton Hills State Park. So our kids have grown up chasing fireflies and dancing to music, and now my granddaughters are chasing fireflies and a part of it. So it's full circle. So I think I've been involved with the Sioux River Folk Fest my entire adult life.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Janet, Matt Faulkner was here talking about the Montrose Music Festival and the collaboration and connection and how that benefits the artists to have, you know, one more place to play in the same area. One of your artists is playing at the Levitt before your event. Talk a little bit about how these connections are building and growing in the region and beyond over the circuit.
We have co-opt for the last 5 years with Matt and the Montrose Music Festival, as well as the Rhythm of the River Festival, which happens over in Jackson, Minnesota, the second weekend in July. It's about 90 miles down the road on I-90. It's a great festival, and so we do a lot of cross-promoting for each other and volunteering at each other's events and sharing information as to who we're booking. And so, and the Levitt, too, we've established a really great collaborative relationship with them. We usually, our board volunteers a couple times during the year, every year. And when they learned that we had Jalon Crossland coming for our festival this year, they reached out to us and asked if we would consider allowing him to play at the Levitt this weekend as well, and we were thrilled. I mean, it's always been our position that any time that you can bring some really great musicians and artists into our area and expose them to as many people as possible, it benefits everybody. And so, you know, Matt has a great message with regards to small towns losing their grocery stores and their swimming pools and not being able to fix their potholes and everything. And what I am kind of piggybacking onto his message is that anytime that you spend attending or engaging in or supporting the arts, it's never time wasted. And the arts don't just live in our larger communities like Sioux Falls. They're out there in our smaller communities like Montrose, like the Worthing Dinner Theater, if you've never been there. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Like the Gayville Opera House down in Gayville that we provide financial sponsorship throughout the year for their programs. Even Carol's Backyard, who, you know, she's been holding some kind of listening room experiences in her backyard for musicians and providing them yet another opportunity to maybe pick up some gas money as they're kind of traveling through the area and hold a little concert. And we just pass a bucket, and whatever goes into that bucket goes straight to the musicians. And so, again, it benefits everybody so much. And I feel like you kind of tend to catch people at their best. Things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it gets us through the good times, it gets us through the bad times, and it allows everybody to just kind of leave the stressors of the day on the side of the road and just come together as a community and just enjoy the fellowship and the arts and everything that goes hand in hand with that.
Yeah.
We often forget about the musicians. Some of our musicians through the years at the festival have turned this into their full-time profession, but a lot are combining other jobs while they're on the road.
Yeah.
It's the ones that are traveling and trying to make their way to maybe two big gigs, and they have to fill that space in between. And Fridays and Saturdays are usually fairly easy. We also offer vintage campers for them, and it's free for the musicians. It's a respite. It's a respite for them to be able to maybe try out something. They haven't played in front of an audience or try a different ending. It's also a respite for the people that we kind of long for that collective. We want to be a part of a collective, and we want to be a part of that community, and neighbors come together. And it is purely a listening session. It's an outdoor listening room. They can get gigs in bars, and there's nothing wrong with bars. I like bars, but sometimes I'm doing other things than paying attention to the musician, and they're well aware that their background music. In this case, there is no other distraction. You're here, and we all know why you're here, to give a listen. And if you want to go visit or look at the farm animals or something, you can go away from that group. But we are about community and collective and collaboration, and we have great arts right here in Sioux Falls, the Premier Playhouse. I mean, we have great art going underneath our noses and different venues. So it isn't a waste of time. I agree with Janet on that. And it makes us a better person. I really do. I think it just makes us a better person. Coming from a liberal arts university, I believe in well-rounded. Mm-hmm. I believe in that.
Yeah. I love that phrase, give a listen.
Yeah.
Listening is an act of generosity. Yep. You're giving something. Give a
listen. Absolutely. And I love, you know, in these smaller type of listening atmospheres, like what you're creating in your backyard, Carol, for musicians to be able to maybe try out some new material in, you know, kind of a safe spot. But it also gives the people that are attending and listening a feeling like they're kind of in on something.
Yeah.
And, you know, hearing something that no one else has heard before. And so it just, you know, it's just part of that whole experience.
Tell us who's coming this year.
Oh, gosh.
What are some highlights? There's a whole booklet here.
Well, you know, we always are certain that we pepper in some of our local and regional acts because we, you know, we think it's very important that we support our local musicians as well. And so we've got Rich Show and Mark Romanowski and a couple other musicians, their first time at Folk Fest. I mean, he's been a staple in the music scene in Sioux Falls for 40 years.
Rich Show has never played Folk Fest?
Folk Fest. So I was thrilled when he reached out to me and said, you know, I got a new project and I think it might be really good for your festival. And I said, let's do this. So we've got him opening the festival for us on Friday night. Jalon Crossland, that I mentioned before, will be our headliner on Friday night. On Saturday, we've got Chicken Wire Empire. They're our big headliner for Saturday night from Wisconsin, as well as Humbletown, which is kind of a local and regional act. And
we're big Humbletown fans on In the Moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big Humbletown
fans.
We
love Humbletown.
Yes.
From the Montrose Music Fest, we've got Mark Stewart. He'll be on our stage on Saturday afternoon, as well as Dave Moore. It's a great lineup. We're really looking forward to it. The weather looks great, knock on wood.
Yeah. Johnny Delaware, who's local, that now lives in Mexico, international.
Yeah, grew up in Lenox.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
Something for everyone.
That's Carol Southwinter and Janet Schmitz, board members of the South Dakota Friends of Traditional Music. The Sioux River Folk Festival runs August 1st through the 3rd at Newton Hills State Park. In 2008, NPR uploaded the first Tiny Desk concert. You can still find it online. In the video, you'll see folk musician Laura Gibson singing and playing guitar.
Where have all your good words gone? Where have all your mercies gone? Oh, where did all your...
NPR Stephen Thompson explains the setup.
Yeah, I just realized that rather than going to shows where very quiet singer-songwriters are drowned out, we could just have them perform at our desks.
And Bob Boylan, who ran NPR's All Things Considered at the time, steps into the camera shot to say,
"So we're going to videotape this for our blog, and maybe it's the start of something, and maybe it's not, but we're certainly glad to have Laura Gibson here today."
Now, though the concert series would go on to reach millions of people every year and become a cultural touchstone and welcome some of the biggest names in music, it was arguably that impromptu setting, a microphone set in front of Bob Boylan's desk, that from the beginning made everything feel so authentic and inspired. Member stations throughout the country were already bringing local musicians to the public airwaves, of course, and often in ways that never would have found a home on commercial radio. At SDPB, usually we call these performances Moment in Sound, at least when they show up here on In the Moment. We have welcomed traveling troubadours and local luminaries. We have hosted children's performers like Phil Baker, surrounded by a studio of wiggling kids. We have welcomed choral singers and Christmas music, singer-songwriters with beat-up guitars and rappers with backing tracks. And every once in a while, we stumble upon something unexpected.
My name's Ellie Harris. I'm 14 years old and I play the flute.
My name's Abram Harris. I'm 13 years old and I play the trumpet.
The Harris family was in South Dakota for a family reunion this summer. They brought their instruments.
My name is Quincy Harris. I'm 10 years old and I play the trombone.
My name is Ida and I am 6 years old and I play the violin and the vibraslap.
That's Ida on violin. And you heard her right, she plays the vibraslap. Because you need just the right mix of percussion to honor metal legend Ozzy Osbourne with your family band. Mom Amanda Harris is on keyboard, she arranges their music, and she's also in charge of making sure performing remains low pressure and a key part of family summer fun.
Just keep going. Your first notes are going to be awesome no matter what they are. Cool? 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, ready, go.
So we will leave you today with an American jazz standard. Feel free to sing along. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, thank you for listening.